So I guess she kind of like helped your daughter then as a co-writer, not only helped with the plotting of the film, but probably with authenticity setting and the like.
She was a huge help with that. Yeah, it kind of happened organically because I was working on a few drafts of the script alone. And then she's just a really creatively inclined person, and we love to do stuff together, and we have a good relationship. And so I was like, hey, let's just read it. And we wound up doing like a series of just one-on-one table reads of the script, and it really helped to read the dialogue out loud together. And we would, you know, rework the dialogue and make sure that it was seeming authentic. And then also along the way, she started to chime in with, you know, structural things like, oh, they would never do that, or that wouldn't it be cool if. And then all of a sudden I was like, wow, I'm really collaborating with my daughter, this is super fun. And it felt right too, because it is, you know, a teenage movie. I mean, not necessarily just for teenagers, but I definitely wanted to make something that wasn't talking down to teenagers, but that was, you know, kind of by and for them at this point. So
yeah, because it's not really just for teenagers. Like you said, this is a movie that's about a transitional time in life, and specifically a transitional time for a young girl's or a young woman's life. And you're using the kind of horror movie trope in order to present that, I guess.
Definitely. I mean, in a way, we're almost subverting the horror movie trope. And so in that way, if you're going into the movie expecting a typical horror movie type layout, you're going to be disappointed. But if you're ready for, you know, a strange roller coaster and something that kind of bends your mind a little bit, I'm hoping it would be like a really fun journey to go on, because, you know, it's kind of maybe more at the end of the day, like more of a trippy, freaky movie than a typical scary movie.
You got the speaking of the trippy part, I liked the way you depicted the people after they had, you know, eaten mushrooms, because they would like stare at lighters for a long time and just, you know, kind of stand in one place, which is, you know, I think kind of what happens more than so than like, oh, we're running around trippy, you know. I mean, there was a little bit of knowingness to that.
Fair to say. And I grew up in Austin, and I had a really neat friend group that a lot of them I'm still friends with, that I grew up with in high school, and we were young seekers. Mm-hmm. And I think that something that sets a drug like psilocybin or mushrooms or, you know, that kind of thing apart from a lot of the you know, just drinking and other, even smoking weed.
Yeah.
But I mean, weed is a little like this too, is it? It helps you get really quiet and go internal and go kind of into a deeper place, which I thought would be kind of a fun thing for trying to help this girl learn things about herself and figure out stuff about herself.
So what was high school like for you? I mean...
Painful, just like everyone else, but better than junior high.
Oh, God, yes.
I mean, in high school, I was lucky to have this group of friends, the Seeker group, because they were all like wannabe beatniks, and we were hanging out on the street corners.
And you called yourselves the Seeker group?
No.
Right. Okay, all right.
That's sort of me, like, looking back on it and putting a label on us.
I got it, all right.
Slightly diminutive, but not really.
Yeah.
But, we were, it was mainly like a bunch of guys was like hanging around with, I had a group of girls and a group of guys, but the guys were kind of my favorites because they were just so wacky. And, you know, they had like a notepad and a drawing pad like in their knapsack, and we would like hang out and play chess on the street corner and listen to jazz and go throw rocks at the bottles at the train tracks, and then, you know, typical stuff, drinking and hanging out. And we did a lot of like running around at night on the Austin Greenbelt, you know, just kind of frolicking through the woods and just...
A similar thing where you're going off to places like we are in this film where abandoned, derelict, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't have an honor farm. The honor farm came from my co-writer. He actually had a place that he would go to that was called the Honor Farm in Pueblo, Colorado, which was an abandoned prison work farm. And it had all of the lore. So that's actually modeled after a real place. But yes, I'm sure we would have gone to the honor farm if we had one. But instead, we... we were a little more like communing with nature. So it was kind of became a hybrid of my high school experiences and then also, you know, my other co-writers' high school experiences. So,
I think this is a question that a lot of people may ask themselves after they watch the picture, which is, and you don't have to give a straight answer to it if you don't want to spoil anything, but I mean, how much of the movie do you think is real and, you know, not, or is just in your main character's head?
Well, I mean, I think a good way to think about the movie is, I mean the frame to be kind of an allegory. So, and there's a kind of a lot of poetry in it, I guess. And one of the things that I was really thinking about and looking at while I was working on it was Carl Jung's theory of the collective unconscious. And he also has this wacky like book called The Red Book that kind of led to the theory of unconscious, the collective unconscious, that has like these wild drawings that he would do when he would put himself into a trance. So it's not so much about whether or not things... I think I have an idea of what really happened. And I think that, you know, my idea could be just as right as the idea that you might interpret when you see the movie. But even deeper than that, if you go deeper down the rabbit hole, the movie is really just sort of about what happens in this crazy, weird experience that we are having right now as humans, you know, like getting like, woo-hoo, way deep, yeah. You know? And so that's the reason why it's meant to be sort of a puzzle, so that you can kind of have a little fun thinking about some of those themes and then also just reminiscing about your own past or if it's something they're going through right then as a teenager, you know, actually have a movie for you that is dealing with some of the stuff that the heavier or more, I don't know, deep thoughts type stuff you might be having.
Yeah, because, your main character, you know, at one point, there's a lot of metaphorical stuff happening here, too, I think, where she's with the boy, and she says at one point, yes, I want to go down the tunnel. You know, I want to do this, you know. And then when you know, they come to the scene where this, you know, woman, there's going to be some sacrifice or something like this, and there's blood coming out of the back of her head and stuff like that, but she is still alive at the same time, you know. So there's a lot of metaphorical things happening, I think, with transitions, with sex, with stuff like that are going on in the film too.
Most definitely. And I mean, I think that's part of the fun of it, is just kind of going with this crazy stuff. And I mean, it's also part of the roller coaster ride, is you really don't know what's going to happen next. But there's definitely some strange stuff that is happening to them. Like, I don't want it to, if none of it's real, then there's no danger. Mm-hmm. And so it's not all in her head. I mean, she's obviously encountered some people, and we're not really sure what's going to happen. So,
is it okay to say that when the donut was held up, I let out a giggle?
I'm so glad. I hope so. I mean, one of the most important things that I felt with this film was, if you want to try to explore deeper themes like this, it's really important not to take yourself too seriously. And I think that in a nutshell is kind of about why the donut exists in the movie.
Good. What was it like, a couple of tech questions, what was it like shooting at night?
Well, it would have been fine, and it would have been difficult shooting at night in and of itself, but it was also the wettest summer in Texas history that year. And so we had rain almost every single day, and very, very few. Like, usually the production strategy that you'll do is, when it's raining, you go for your interiors. But most of the movie takes place outside and at night. And so that left us with some serious challenges, you know, the crew worked so hard. And also there were so many extra bugs because it was so wet. It was like shooting in the tropical jungle, basically. And, you know, they would be laying cables and setting up all the lights in the just pouring rain day after day, with the hope that it would clear up long enough that we could fire up the lights and shoot for a little while and, you know, keep moving the production forward. So it was intense.
Tell me about the casting of the picture, too, and how you found your leads, your team, and, you know, what you were looking for, seeing as how you were partly looking at some of your own experiences, drawing from some of this for the picture, but then, you know, wanting to make it contemporary too.
Yeah, it was really an interesting process because I had a little bit of seed money actually from the City of Austin Cultural Contracts Program. And the way that that works is you have to actually spend that money within the year. And so I was forced to just get going, but we didn't have all the funding for the movie. So what I did is I found my three primary female leads and cast them, and then we went and we managed to get work our way into an actual prom and shot the footage of prom. And we didn't even have a full script. It was just kind of a treatment and kernel of the idea at that point. And then after that, it became a race against time because we needed to find the rest of the financing in order to keep those three main girls in the movie and have them not age out. And so that actually took us like a couple of years, and it was a little frightening. But then, and I was working with the local casting director, Vicky Boone, who's super talented. She's worked on like, you know, movies with Terrence Malick and Richard Linklater, and just, she's incredible. And then we also branched out and worked with someone in Los Angeles, Emily Schweber. And she was able to help me bring in like Leah Macon and like Mackenzie Astin from Facts of Life.
Wow.
And, you know, like people that it would be hard for me to get without somebody who kind of has their, has a place in Los Angeles, the Los Angeles hierarchy, who can kind of legitimize the project. So between those two ladies and a lot of help from my executive producers, we wound up finally getting the cast and pulling it together and shooting.
So, I mean, this is your first narrative feature, yeah, that you're working on. And what are you, I mean, what are your hopes for it and, you know, your future plans?
Well, I really hope that young adults and teens and the young at heart are able to see it, that we can find a way to get it out so that, because I feel like it's, you know, it is kind of an art movie for teens, but I think it's also something that can work. You know, so we're working to, you know, secure a good distribution deal for it. And I'm also hoping that this will be something that'll allow me to keep working with actors and doing some more narrative work, because that's kind of where I started out. I was an actress when I was a teenager, and I love working with actors. I also love docs, and so I'd be happy to do more doc stuff. But I'm hoping to just keep getting to do this.
Karen, thank you very much.
Thank you.